Welcome to the latest edition of the Carmichael Governance Podcast. I'm Dermot O'Kerbui, CEO of Carmichael. Carmichael is a charity that provides supports to other Irish charities, particularly in the area of governance. You can find details of what we do and a wide range of free resources on our website, that's carmichaelireland.ie. You can also find previous editions of our governance podcast on our website or on your favourite podcast platform, be that Apple, Spotify, Acast. Today, I'm speaking to Sharon Hughes, and Sharon is the manager of the Leadership Academy, and we're going to talk all about leadership in the non-profit sector. So Sharon, maybe to start us off, you might introduce yourself, your background, your career to date, and a bit about the Leadership Academy.
Hi Dermot, thank you so much for having me. My name is Sharon Hughes, and I'm new to the sector. So before this, I was the CEO of TU Dublin Students' Union. And since September 2022, I've been manager for the Leadership Academy. The Leadership Academy is a project of the WHEAL, Ireland's National Association of Charities, Community and Voluntary Organisation and Social Enterprises. The Leadership Academy is a new project. It's a space for leaders at all levels of the sector to access relevant upskilling resources, to find spaces to engage with other people interested in leadership, to learn from those with leadership experience, and then to gain the tools and the opportunities to take the next step on their leadership journey, whatever their starting point is. And we do this through cultivating a library of available resources, running events and developing programmes that we identify a need for in the sector.
Excellent. And it's an initiative I've been very, very supportive of, and I think it is great that we have this focus on leadership in the sector, because it's very, very important. So maybe just to get you off, a nice easy one for you, Sharon, in terms of when we talk about leadership, what does leadership mean to you?
This is the million-dollar question, especially since I've started the role and I've had the time and the space to do research and meet people and talk to people. I don't think there's a single definition of leadership. I think trying to lock it down is probably a waste of resources, but it involves a certain package of skills that involve encouraging and influencing other people towards the completion of a common goal. And I think those skills and the level of the skills depend on the common goal and the strength of the common goal. I don't think there's a single leadership. What about you? How do you describe it?
It's one that I've always struggled with, I think when you talk about a leader, it's sort of you're leading somewhere.
Yeah.
So where is that somewhere is very, very important. Is then what are we trying to achieve here, and how can we get there, and how, if I'm the leader, can I mobilize and get engagement and get support from others? Because you can be a leader in your own little world, but usually leadership involves other people, and I think bringing people along to achieve a common goal or get to a particular destination or achieve a particular result, that's what we're talking about, leadership. How you get there and how you do it can vary, vary so much. And that's part of probably what I'm trying to get the definition down.
Yeah.
And which is sort of, for me, I was going to ask you then, is leadership sort of people are born leaders, or is it, do you think there are things people can do to develop their leadership skills? Sort of, say, you may have certain attributes, but by doing these sort of things that you can help enhance and improve your leadership skills. I think maybe the whole thing about the Leadership Academy is to create that sort of forum.
I don't believe in trait leadership. I definitely think there are certain personality traits that lend themselves better to leadership. I know from a psychological perspective, extroversion is one that's very associated with leadership, but there's a higher number of extroversion. And I do think that there are certain people who, they do seem to, like, we call them natural leaders. They do seem to fit the mould of what we expect from leaders. But I think it's the combination of traits means that I think you can learn them. And I think the whole point to something like the Leadership Academy is acknowledging that with the right resources, everybody has the potential to tap into leadership qualities. Leadership is really individual and it's really personal. And the same leader that you might follow, I might be like, geez, your man's not my cup of tea, and vice versa. So because there's not a one size fits all definition of a leader, I think that works the other way. Like when people say to me, and people do say, oh, I'm not a leader, or they don't identify as leaders. especially women, but you'll find them advocating for playgrounds in their local area, or advocating for SNAs in their school, or advocating for their community or their families. So I think it depends. I don't think there's such a thing as that, well, that person when they grow up is going to be a leader. It totally depends on the circumstances, the drive, what drives a person to become a leader in a particular space, that they see a social need or a community need and say, right, well, I'm going to step into that space. And maybe some of the best leaders in the world, if they've been born in different places, would never have had a need to become. So I do think it can be learned.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, because I was just thinking there, because, you know, I'm a big fan of podcasts, hence from doing these podcast series, but there's one podcast series that I just love history, but it's called The Great Dictators. And it goes and takes a dictator. And one thing that struck me is when you look at some of these most infamous dictators, their lives were, you know, you would never have said this person is going to be a leader of the country. You know, General Franco, Gaddafi, Adolf Hitler. You can go on and on. And but what they had was a drive and a passion and circumstances that they spotted opportunities and they went after it. Yeah. And they said, this is something I want to do. In the middle of the one on Hitler, and he's going into sort of how on earth did this person ever get to where he got to and caused untold damage. So that, you know, maybe it's not a good example in terms of leadership, but it is something that, that these were not born leaders in terms of they had certain skills, but they had that drive. That's something that we're going to make, they were determined to get there. So I think part of that, you know, is it something that you can develop. And circumstances can give you that drive.
Yeah, I know when at the last Breakfast Club, we spoke about moral courage, and the two speakers were Yemi Adeniyi and Linda Kelly. And the reason we picked them was because they're both leaders, but unintentional. What happened to both of them was so traumatic. So Linda ended up leading the Better Maternity campaign, and Yemi ended up like basically becoming her clan like spokesperson in Nigeria, because the expectation was, as one of seven daughters, that she had no future, no respectable future. And in their efforts to fight back against how they were treated, they both ended up becoming leaders in their field. So it's not just a drive. I think sometimes the drive can be not just external, but it can be an intrinsic, like, this is unfair, and I want to, obviously, the dictator.
I know, it's a different extreme, but it is that one where people are, this is not good enough, or this is not right. Yeah. And it is that moral thing where, you know, the dictators is one extreme, but it's those people that step up in their communities to say, let's put something here, let's organise something, let's, you know, this services are inadequate, or we need things for people to do or to go. So those leaders are very, very important, in their communities and in the societies. So it does take those people to say, I'm going to do something about it. I'm not going to sit back and just complain. And I'm going to step forward. Yeah. And I may not have all the skills and all the textbook skills of a leader, but I have that determination to make a difference.
And I think most of them, when you ask to reflect back on their journey, they'll say to you, I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew, you know, I needed to get some neighbours involved, or I needed to tell people what was going on, or I needed to do a Facebook page. Most of them would still nearly reject the title or the label of leadership. But that's how it starts.
It does. And because these podcasts are focused really on the needs of the non-profit sector, is the requirements of leadership in the non-profit any different from any other walk of life or any other sort of sector?
Personally, from what I've seen, no. I mean, there's such a variety of organisations and types of organisations in the sector, similar as there is in the private sector. And I'd actually go nearly the opposite and maybe say, well, like, maybe we need to be looking for more similar skills, because we need like leaders of society. It doesn't really matter from what sector they come from. So, no, I don't. For me, I don't think there's any. Do you?
No, I think, you know, what makes a good leader carries across all the walks of life, and there'll be different things that resonate in particular circumstances. But the basic things are that somebody will follow, because if you have a leader, you need followers. And who's going to follow you? And there are certain things about being authentic, you know, and genuine, and those are very, very important traits that, you know, if people say, Sharon, she's really committed, and she's somebody that I will help out. I will get involved. So that following, maybe just I will attend that meeting. I will volunteer to take on that particular task, because I believe what has been articulated, but I also believe that Sharon is the person that's going to do something and a step forward. You know, even though you say maybe not natural leader, but they say I'm not going to take this anymore, or I want to make a difference in. And that sounds sort of very lofty, but it is making differences is so important to this sector. I said, well, why do we get involved in this sector? Why do we? It's a different world in some ways, but it is, we want to change things.
Yeah, and I think in the sector, one of the things is conviction. To like, people have to believe in their the ethos and you know why they're doing why the organisation they're in a way that probably doesn't matter in the private sector as much, you
as
know.
Much, yeah, I would say as much, because I do think it does matter. But I think
for our sector,
yeah,
we have a purpose.
Yes,
and those it is a social purpose, yeah. And that's the driver. It's a distinguishing. Well, you know, why we're involved, because we want to achieve or do something. Our organisations are involved in doing things, whether it is involved in a local community initiative, that is Meals on Wheels, or whether it is tackling homelessness. Those are the driver, and that sort of gives that purpose and gives that. Then you need the leaders to help us. How do we get there? Looking at the Leadership Academy is something I think is a great initiative. Is there a particular issue from you looking in and your experience of the sector to date that in terms of we in the sector have in terms of retaining and building that leadership cohort?
I think. And I'm new enough to the sector, so I'm
fresh eyes,
but very surface level. I don't think it's any secret that the sector is tight from a kind of cash point of view, and leadership costs money. Like, I think there's no getting away from it. If you are hoping to train and develop people, it needs to be resourced. So if you're looking at getting like quality courses and quality training, there needs to be a financial budget for that, and there also needs to be the HR supports that go with it, because a lot of what we hear back is about coaching and mentoring, but then you talk to people and there might only be 3 or 4 people in the organisation, and that extra mental load of trying to support somebody else is exhausting. So I think where people do have training and development budgets, they quite, like, no judgment, it goes on governance and finance and that kind of health and safety and those kind of like technical requirements. So I think the biggest challenge, and it's one that I hope the Leadership Academy will be involved in the agenda as we go forward, is actually making sure that investing in people is seen as important to the function of an organisation as any of the rest of its functions. There's change in demographics in the sector. I know that's come up in conversation as well. The current cohort of leaders, there needs to be good succession planning coming along behind so we need to support the next generation of leaders. So there's people ready to step into those roles. And I think about retention. Retention is a big issue as well. And I think there probably needs to be more looking at flexibility. Because I know the non-profit sector was always seen as being a bit more family-friendly up until pre-COVID. And I think a lot of the private companies cottoned on to work-from-home arrangements, flexi-time arrangements and stuff. So the next generation don't expect to work a 40-hour week the way we expected to when we left college. So I think they want different things from their careers. And I think as a sector, we probably need to be looking at that. Like, HR has changed. It's not one size fit all anymore. You cannot just advertise one job description and have five people won't take the same job. One of them will want remote working, one of them will want part time, one of them will want flexi time. So I think that's a lot of, again, mental load for smaller organisations in particular. So there are some challenges there, I think.
I think the point we're making about investing in people, there is a reluctance that it's in, well, can charities and non-profits take very scarce resources and put it into people rather than to the purpose of what the organisation is? And there's maybe some sort of guilt sometimes, but I was taken by that Richard Branson phrase about, saying training is wasted. If you train your people, they leave. And he said, well, I'd be more worried if you don't train them and they stay. So I think being conscious that we do need to invest, we are a people business. We deliver our services and through people, and we want those people to be best equipped as they possibly can. So it does require investing and taking a strategic approach to that. And that's what I liked about the Leadership Academy is it's now putting it front square in terms of the agendas and sort of thing. What are we doing in our organisation? How can we tap into the resources that are available, but then ask our questions about things we should be doing internally in our organisations?
Yeah, and hopefully us identifying some of these challenges and working towards them will help. But I think society is so reliant on this sector to provide so many community functions, like, you know, they look after our children, they look after our old people, they look after our vulnerable people. Do you really want them to be happy under invested in people? I mean, it's in everybody's benefit that the people who work in the sector are resourced to develop, because leadership is very much about self-actualization as well. It's about bringing yourself to the next level, and as humans, it's a basic need. So absolutely, like, people need to see investing in the people who do this work as important as doing the work.
And the other thing you were mentioning there, Sharon, was the whole area of succession planning. I think sometimes that just gets more of a lip service approach rather than then, well, what does succession planning mean in practice? And sometimes it's dealing with difficult questions and say, we don't want to talk about the CEO falling under the bus. Yeah. But it does, unfortunately, where CEOs or senior leaders or senior managers in an organisation may suddenly not be available. So what would you say to that whole area of succession planning? I know it's one of your hot topics.
It's one of my hot topics. It is absolutely, it's probably up there with one of the most addressed questions that I've been asked since I started. Succession planning is layered. I think that's one of the things that's a Pandora's box. Like, when you open it, it starts with, well, the poor old CEO got hit by a bus, so we're going to get the director for finance to step in. But who's going to step in for the director of finance? And then who's going to step in for that person? It's not as simple as, well, you know, the CEO is gone, quick, we need a new one. So it is massive. I can completely understand the overwhelm of the CEO thinking, right, I have to succession plan on top of running the organisation, and the irony of organising your own going away party.
I'm looking at being getting rid of, you know, and again, a lot of times it's when, okay, it's a planned event, so somebody, you know, is coming up to retirement.
Yeah.
But it doesn't always work that way.
No.
So I would think, you know, because we've been through quite a rigorous process recently, and it's stimulated, you know, I'm of a certain age where retirement isn't something way off in the distance. It's something that's in the next few years. But we started sitting down and realizing, as you say, it's very layered. There's a lot of things you need to think about. And if we were in the situation, say, or you needed an emergency replacement, how would we operate it? So these are discussions we've been having with the board, but also with the management team, and saying this can happen. How would happen? And even just the practical things of, well, what does the CEO do on a daily, weekly, monthly basis?
Yeah.
Are there certain passwords that they would need, or where are the different things located? How would, just the simple things of what the calendar. So we wonder, and I start documenting. You've a job description, just doesn't give you the half of what person does. Any job description is just very much high level. So it is something that, looking at the requirements of the role you're going to fill, but then say, well, who could fill it, and if there are gaps, what can we do to plug this? Help that person. That we've identified that potentially could step into the role or might have to step in the role, what other exposures in their own development that outside of their own role, and I think that opens up a different conversation. And I did hear, in terms of, we looked at, okay, we were training people for their functional area, but if they had to take a broader area, what other skills, what other things they need to do? So I think spending that time is very, very important, which leads me in sort of to the next question in terms of nurturing and building the next generation of leaders in the sector. What sort of things should the organisations themselves be doing, and what sort of things are the Leadership Academy helping to enable in that whole process of the next generation of leaders?
So we're very much still a kind of exploring and finding out what people's needs are. And like I said, succession planning wouldn't have been the thing I would have thought was pressing coming into the role, but actually has come up more than once. So a key thing that we're hoping to do with the Academy is the sector's huge. Like, I've heard anything from 168,000 to 188,000 people. But it's disparate because of the size, a lot of smaller organisations. So, like, if you look at, like, I remember when I was on maternity, my friend who worked for a very large bank was on maternity, and I got an Argos voucher and a bouquet of flowers, which was gorgeous and very, very delighted with it. She got a maternity coach, a financial coach, a champion. I was a quad as a champion, and a champion is a person whose only job is to basically say your name at every meeting so that nobody forgets that you're gone. Like, unbelievable. And I was like, yeah, like, my flowers were lovely. And, you know, it was just the way things were. I went back after 6 months and people were like, oh, you're back, as opposed to any sort of a... So what we lack in the size per organisation, we have per sector. So there are loads of, like, where it might not be appropriate for a 3-person organisation to have a mentoring, a coaching scheme, we can set one up sector-wide, which we will be doing. So we can't compete with them, but as a sector, we have the capacity to run support programmes. So we're hoping to make that happen. The resource library, one of the things that people say, and they're right, I think somebody said to me, if you throw a stone, you'll hit a leadership course. So I think there's a lot of overwhelm where people are like, I would love to do a course in this, but every time I Google it, I get hit in the face with 74 million courses. So we're going to curate that list. So, like, we're meeting with organisations, figuring out which of those courses are actually applicable, breaking it down into the same amount of information for each one, and then we'll be listing it on the site. And that'll be everything from free resources, because sometimes it can be as beneficial to listen to an hour podcast like this that is relevant to the sector and that you take something useful away from it, as it is going, you know, on a master's program. So we'll be doing that. We're also going to use the size of the sector to negotiate deals. So we've worked with the UCD Professional Academy to negotiate a deal for the sector where they are getting basically the same deal that the larger organizations get, but they're getting it through the Leadership Academy rather than having to go through individual. And then the last thing that we need to do is create space, because people don't have time to stop and think. And that everybody's just like done, on to the next thing. There's just it just seemed to be in a cycle of like funding, applications, governance reporting, audits, and start again. So the breakfast clubs have they're not attached to a task. So they're not attached to finance, they're not attached to HR, they're teamed. Like, they're not aimed for CEOs or volunteers. They're just, if you have an interest in that team, the idea being that you come and you just have a think. And one lady told us that it was the breakfast clubs were her date with herself, that they were her commitment to just taking a little bit of time to step back and think, what is next? Because you'll get caught in the hamster wheel of still going. So we're committed to making those spaces and then helping make connections, because we're lucky enough in our roles that we get to meet so many people doing so many things. So it's to make sure that Dermot knows Sharon is doing something, or Sharon might be connected to Perrine, or, you know, so that we're helping, because there is a lot of commonalities at this level. Maybe not in what the organisations do, but we all have people and we all want those people to do well. So capitalising on those commonalities as opposed to the disparities, I think, would be a big one.
I think it's an important role that I can see the Academy having is a connector. Because you say there are loads of resources out there. Mm-hmm. There's loads of things you could do, but sometimes it's connecting to the right court or the right person or the right sort of event that can have a huge impact. And people have to be very judicious in how much time they can spend on it. So being connected to the right path is very, very, I would say, very much part of what the Leadership Academy can do. There is a responsibility on the current leaders and the current senior managers in the to create conditions to help support the next generation. The next generation themselves, what sort of things should they be doing? So what sort of things, they're starting off their career, they're maybe 2-3 years into the sector. What sort of things should they be doing to sort of develop their leadership potential?
So one of the schools of the Leadership Academy is divided into schools. So it's leaders of self, team, organisations and from the sector. And one of the reasons we talk about leaders of self is, like, if you don't commit to setting yourself up for success as early as possible, you're not going to be able to lead anybody else. So I think a lot of it is to start with your own basics. And it can be just as simple as podcasts or reading books, working on communication, your communication style. Like, list, there's so many things when you think about podcasts, blogs, books, there's so many great things out there. Know your own values and your own morals and your own code. I think people need to do work. The earlier you can figure out what matters to you and what's important to you, the happier you'll be quickly. And I would say grow your network, start your network as early as possible and start your community. Find your enablers and the people who are happy to see you do well and nurture them as best you can. So education and learning are different. You can educate for as long as you want. There'll always be education, but the earlier you learn, and even just committing, just saying, you know what, I'm going to do one thing this week. I'm going to read one article. I'm going to listen to one podcast. And those things compound. They start off very small and manageable, but they add up over a lifetime, would be my advice.
No, absolutely. And I do think, and I'm fascinated by that concept of the champion that your friend got the benefit of. But it is great. But I do think cultivating your own champions, that yes. People, we've done a recent podcast on networking, and that thing is who's speaking in the room when you're not there, yeah. on your behalf,
yeah.
And that is an important concept. So looking at people that will help you along the way,
yeah.
Maybe some of the champions, and the other one that very close to my heart is the whole idea of mentoring. And
yes.
It's one of the first things I did when I came into Carmichael was to try and get a mentoring program up there, because I see the value of having that trusted source to help you on particular issues or a range of things that you can go and talk and get some advice and guidance. I think it's very, very important
that
you avail of those sort of supports, whether it's formal or informal, but have someone to talk to, because, as you mentioned, our sector is full of small organisations. So there may be one or two people working in the organisation. So you have a work colleague, but they not may be the most suitable person to sort of tease out an issue with or things you might be having. And if you're a CEO or manager, your board mightn't be the right time at that time. So it's having some space that you have for yourself, that a trusted thing. I think, you know, look at those things, whether you're somebody you can go and talk to and that you trust and that you value, that they're there acting in your interest. They've no other agenda, only to see what can I do to help you if I can. And if I can't, I'll tell you, look, I can't help you there, but here's somebody else that might be able to help you. So I think working on that, networking, mentoring, but having a sense of what's good for you and where you want to go, and that you could, you know, is very important. This has been fascinating, and Sharon, and this is something we could, as I said, leadership is so wide and vast, and we could be talking about it forever, but I think it's important people think about their own leadership style and their own leadership ambitions, because, you know, there's so many potential leaders out there, and I think the Leadership Academy has a very important role in providing supports, guidance, signposting, and practical sort of support in itself. As a final question, and I know you asked me this in one thing, so I'm reversing the table back on you. I said, okay, what leader do you admire, and why do you admire?
So I picked two, because you really made me think about it, and I was like, this is a sector podcast, and I actually pick you. And I knew, I was like, he's going to think that's naff, but I'm going to tell you why as well, because you are so authentic. You actually live your, you know, you talk about succession planning, but you live your succession planning. And you hear that even through your team, and you're such an enabler. And I know you were one of the first people I got put in touch with when I started my job, and you gave your time so quickly, and you were so open and honest. And I know that I could contact you. I just think you're great for the sector. But I genuinely think
that's
you are thoughtful, and you are an enabler, and you are a pragmatist, and I always enjoy talking to you. So I think you're an excellent example of a leader in the sector. My second one is Jacinda Ahern. And I actually loved her, but when she quit, I loved her more, because I think probably one of the most uncelebrated leadership skills is knowing when to stop, and knowing that, you know, in no other situation in the world are you expected to commit to something for life. I mean, you're even allowed to get divorced, but you're not allowed to stop doing a role when it's not fit for you. So I actually have huge admiration. I think that's something we probably need to talk about more. I think it is part of the succession planning, but the idea that you can outgrow a role, the role can outgrow you, and that's not a bad thing, and it's about preparing for when it's so. I just loved that. I don't think that got the interpretation it should have got when it happened.
No, I think it's an excellent choice, and more than Jacinta, because again, even when she was leader, she was a breath of fresh air, yeah. And I think that caught people, the honesty, the humility, yeah. Empathy, but also it is a fantastic thing to say, right, this isn't working for me, or this is I've given what I can, all I can give. I think it's time for me to step off. It's always that tricky one. When do you exit stage left, and knowing that this is the time? And I think that takes some character. Yeah. And I think an excellent choice of leader in just that. So this has been fantastic, Sharon, and thank you for your very kind words. I was blushing here. Luckily, this is a video recording, but you were very, very kind. But it wasn't part of the deal to come on to sing up my praises, but I do thank you very much for that. But no, this has been fantastic, and I do think the Leadership Academy is going to be a force for good in the sector. And it is very early days. It is evolving, and you are the first manager. It's very much an early stage, and it is part of exploration and finding out what works. Some things won't work. That's a part of life. Certain things will take off slowly and then suddenly explode. But I would advise people that haven't looked up the Leadership Academy to do so. And if you're more comfortable picking up the phone, I'm sure have a word with Sharon.
Yeah, absolutely, Dermot. And if anyone has any good ideas, or if they, like you said, we're in early stages, if they'd like to contact us, we are open to hearing everything at this stage. That's the great thing about this stage. My email is sharon@wheel.ie. It doesn't have it there, it's just wheel.ie. And LinkedIn is actually the best place to follow us. It's the Leadership Academy. You'll see it connected to the Wheels page, and that's where we're listing all of our events, which are all currently free and open to everybody to join, not just members of the Wheel.
So thank you very much, Sharon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to our latest Carmichael Governance podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, it would be of great benefit to us if you could give it a rating, as that helps to create greater awareness of these podcasts. So until the next time, slán go fóill.